Welcome back to another edition of the D'Antonio Wingcast. I'm Ben from Blazers Edge, and I'm here with Kevin Pelton from Basketball Prospectus. Kevin, you come on this week to go ahead and give us the full rundown on the latest thinking with the number 10 pick in the draft. What are your Indiana Pacers going to do?
Well, I'm prepared to finally tell you what the Pacers are going to do, and it's going to be... you got that right.
I think you went through a tunnel, Kevin. I think you went through a tunnel there. Get off the yacht in the sound. Get out of the Puget Sound. Get back into your office and let's record this. I couldn't quite hear you. So you said draft Avery Bradley?
It's really going in and out all the time. I don't know. It seems like only when I talk about draft-related stuff. How bizarre. It's almost like I don't want to talk about it.
Well, are you kind of in a awkward situation with what you can and cannot say at this point of the year?
No, yeah, you know, I'm trying to say as little as possible because the draft is kind of what we've been working towards for, you know, a few months here with the Pacers, and now it's approaching.
Are you totally sure you're not just trying to be Sam Presti? Are you getting a little bit too into yourself here, a little bit, feeling yourself a little too much, and, you know, you look up at your hero, Sam, and you see, you know, he plays his cards so close to his chest, it's inside his shirt. And you're trying to think like, yeah, I want to do the same thing. Is that kind of what's happening?
Well, let's say I can understand why Sam operates the way he does.
Well, so what are we going to do, KP? We promised the people all these draft, you know, podcasts. We're going to break down the class in excruciating detail, give them all the latest ins and outs about the Blazers, about the Pacers. And then, you know, you're kind of leaving me hanging here.
Well, I mean, honestly, I'm not really the right guy to talk to anyway. You know, I know the stats, but I've barely seen I haven't seen a lot of these guys play. You know, I think with Luke Babbitt we were discussing last week, and I was like, no, I've never seen him play. So, you know, I don't really know anything about his game other than the stats. So why don't you get a real expert?
KP, I did exactly that. I went and got Jonathan Givony from Draft Express. He dropped all sorts of knowledge on us, including who the Blazers are going to take in the first round, who the Blazers are going to take in the second round, how much he dislikes DeMarcus Cousins. Actually, no, it was me who dislikes DeMarcus Cousins. But he said that my dislike was well-founded and a whole lot more. He breaks down the international class, what changes has come from the mentality of international players coming over to America. He gives it all to us, KP. It's going to be awesome. It's a very special Wingcast. Are you excited?
That sounds great. I can't wait to listen to it.
You're actually going to listen?
Yeah, first time.
You never listen to the Wingcast. Oh, because now we've got someone who's good on. Now you actually want to you want to give it some extra attention.
That's part of it. But you know, when I actually participate in it, I don't feel like I have to listen to it. That's like, I don't know, like playing a basketball game and then you go home and watch it on video. If like, you know, Kobe went home after a game one of the NBA Finals and was watching it, not for like tape purposes and trying to scout and figure out what to do, but he was just like, oh, that was an awesome move I just made. Check me out.
Well, I guess you're calling me Kobe then, because I do this every time. I re-listen to every single podcast. I listen mostly to my voice. I don't really listen to yours so much, but
you just fast forward through whenever I'm talking. Yeah, and you know, I don't think that's a terrible comparison. But yeah, this should be good stuff. Jonathan, I was just discussing with him today on Twitter how we used to chat in the Hoops World message boards back like a decade ago, or something like that. And now it's good to see that he's. He's become the go-to guy when it comes to draft analysis.
I think he's one of the foremost experts, and definitely from our quote-unquote generation, he is the foremost expert, and it was great to get his thoughts. So here it is, without further ado. I'm here with Jonathan Givony from Draft Express. Jonathan, how you doing?
Doing great, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Hey, we brought you on this week because Kevin Pelton obviously can't talk so much about the draft because he's got his top-secret plans for the Indiana Pacers. We wanted to get your sense of, you know, the draft in general, but then also, you know, what the Blazers might be looking to do, what some possibilities would be for them. Now, I know you've been all over the circuit, you know, over the last, what, probably month to 6 weeks, the Chicago pre-draft combine up in Minnesota. You know, have the Blazers been, you know, an active presence there? Have they been really public? Have you seen, you know, Kevin Pritchard and the rest of the Brand Trust chat and Mike Bourne around?
I mean, the Blazers are the kind of one of the teams that you see everywhere you go, and whether that's in November at the college basketball preseason tournament, whether it's during the summer at the European Championships in Treviso, at the the Adidas, all kinds of camps, anywhere that there's players to be scouted, the Blazers are going to have one person or even the entire staff. So I see Kevin Pritchard on the road all the time, and Chad Buchanan, Mike Bourne, Doc Martin, Jason Filippi. The list goes on and on. I mean, the Blazers are one of the hardest working front offices in the NBA, without a doubt.
You know, there's been a lot of questions here in Portland about Kevin Pritchard's job status and some of that stuff. Have you noticed any change in his demeanor over the past year, or is it sort of business as usual for them? Because my sense was, you know, we were at that Sloan conference in Boston, and it seemed like that was when he was at his happiest this year, when he was sort of away from maybe some of the backroom drama in Portland. Do you get the sense that maybe when he's on the road, does he seem pretty happy? Does it seem like it's business as usual, or has there been any change recently?
Kevin is, you know, a really charismatic and engaging guy. And I was just hanging out with him and the Portland guys just 2 weeks ago in Minneapolis. I had dinner. We were watching the Celtics game, the Celtics Magic, and it seemed like business as usual to me, you know, so I didn't notice anything special.
Well, that's definitely good to hear. Hey, business as usual for the Blazers when it comes to the draft, generally speaking, has been to be really active, and oftentimes that's moving up. When you look at their roster, you know, they're still saying they want best player available, but they obviously have a couple holes. You know, they need a point guard, and they also you could use an extra body up front. You know, right now you've got them slotted to take Kevin Seraphin from France. He's one of those Hoop Summit prospects. What led you to put him in that spot right now, and how likely do you think it's going to be that the Blazers actually stay at 22 and use that pick that way?
I really think that the Blazers could do anything in this draft. I mean, if there's anything that we've noticed from covering this in depth over the last, you know, 7 years, is that these guys are not afraid to move. And, you know, in terms of sheer quantity of trades, I mean, they're in front for the last 3 years by a huge margin. So why Kevin Seraphin there? I think that they're in a position where they have stockpiled quite a bit of talent over the last few years. And when you're at 22, I'm not really sure that a playoff team like Portland is going to be able to find, to plug in one of their immediate holes at 22 in a draft. Now, I think that it's possible that they're going to be able to move up, or maybe there's going to be a guy that ends up sliding like DeJuan Blair did that maybe you can get lucky and pick up. But I really think that the draft is not going to be the salvation or what changes the future for Portland unless they make some really incredible moves, which I wouldn't rule out knowing them.
What's your sense for how open to the idea some of the teams maybe in the later lottery or the early teens are to, you know, entertaining offers for those picks? I mean, our teams, we haven't heard maybe as much trade chatter as I kind of remember from previous seasons, and maybe it's still a little bit early for some of those, you know, really specifics to develop, but how open are some of those teams to, you know, trading down or swapping picks and maybe trying to pick up another asset? The Blazers have obviously done that before, you know, Jared Bayless trade comes to mind. How open are those teams to making those kinds of deals?
I think they're extremely open. I've heard quite a bit of discussion in the late lottery in particular. Indiana is a team that many have pegged as highly unlikely to keep that pick. I think that Memphis is another one at 12. I think you could see Toronto being very active, maybe trying to get another pick or trading up or down. Minnesota, you know, at 16, definitely can't keep all their draft picks. They have five of them. There's no way you can have five rookies on an NBA roster. I think that Utah, in the right situation, would be willing to move their pick. I think the Clippers at 8, you know, I mean, they need a wing, and some of those wing players are a little bit of a stretch there. So I think we're going to see a lot of activity. Maybe the reason we haven't heard as much chatter is I've been a little bit more reluctant this year just, you know, to engage in the rumor mongering and all that, you know, the word on the street columns, which people love reading, but I don't really know how useful they are. Quite a bit of it actually turns out to be accurate, but when people were calling me, you know, exchanging information with me, you know, it's I'm just a little bit reluctant to go out and share that unless people are comfortable with that. And then you start getting into the smoke screens and you get, you know, people are using you for certain ways. And I don't, you know, we're probably going to have to join into that party here pretty soon, but I'm going to have to do that reluctantly.
Hey, you know, one of the big rumors I think that came out initially, you know, from Yahoo was that the Blazers may be looking to trade up a long way, you know, theoretically almost to the top five. And, you know, the thought around Portland was maybe that they were zeroing in on a wing player. you know, a guy like Wesley Johnson, and maybe, you know, they would be moving some of their current wings, their twos and threes, like a Rudy or a Martell Webster, to try to facilitate that move upward of the board. You know, it's pretty hard for the Blazers probably to get from 22 up to the top five. Are there other, you know, small forwards or wing type players that they may have targeted? You know, I'm looking at your draft board right now. You know, the threes I see, you know, in the late lottery, mid-teen range would be like Luke Babbitt, Paul George. I mean, are there other guys that you could see them trying to make a play for in that range?
I could totally see them making a play for Paul George. From what I understand, they had a private workout with him in Minnesota while other teams were doing the group workout. They brought in Paul George. They had him work out against Dominic Jones. So they're going to, you know, at 22, it's unlikely that he's going to be there, but they could definitely move up. He's the kind of guy that I could see fitting in on their roster. He has a little bit of Batum to his game, but he's probably a little bit more skilled offensively. And you know how much, you know, Kevin Pritchard likes really long, athletic guys, and he fits that mold to a T. So I think that that's a guy that potentially they could be targeting if Nate McMillan believes that he can play for him defensively, which I think he definitely has the potential to do.
How far away is he from being an impact player in the NBA, a rotation player? Because they've really kind of harped on that in recent interviews, that they want a guy who knows what his role is and sounds like he has a pretty defined role, but is also going to be able to impact games quickly, because they're starting to think, you know, deep playoff runs at this point. Is he a guy you plug in next year and he can be that player for you?
You know, he's one of the tougher guys in this draft to really figure out. I was not super high on him over the course of the year. Every time I would watch him, he would just, like, settle for fadeaway jumpers and didn't really play that hard defensively. And the whole team, as a general, was just a mess. With a lot of talent, they were a mess. They were one of the worst teams in the WAC. And I just couldn't figure out, is it why this guy who's so incredibly talented, why can't he get it done a little bit more? But then you start doing more research into his background and you realize that he started playing basketball very late. He comes from a very small town in California, Palmdale. He didn't really play AAU. You know, he's one of these late blooming guys, didn't get any scholarship offers from the Pac-10. And so you figure, you think, hey, I mean, maybe he's one of these guys that, you know, is going to figure it out later in his career. I went to watch him work out in L.A., and I was absolutely floored by how talented this guy is. You know, I'd heard the Tracy McGrady comparison before, and while I don't think that's fair to compare anybody, any rookie to Tracy McGrady, you can see where that's coming from, just in terms of the overall talent, the fluidity. His pull-up jumper is incredible. He's got length, explosiveness. Everything's just come so easily for this guy. So we're about to post a video on the site here in the next day or so, and everybody's going to want to see exactly what we're talking about. So he's a very, very intriguing prospect, and he's the kind of guy that I could totally see a team falling in love with and maybe, you know, hitting a home run there. I mean, if you take a guy in the late lottery and he ends up being a star, then you've done something incredible. So that's the kind of move that wouldn't shock me, especially coming from Kevin Pritchard and the Blazers staff.
That's you know, that's obviously going to be very exciting to a lot of Portland fans. Hey, when you look at some of the other positions, you know, again, you know, keeping in mind that they're going to probably be, you know, in the latter half of the first round, the knock on this draft is there hasn't been a ton of point guards, especially guys maybe who are really going to be impact ready right from the gate. Are there any guys that you see being available at 22 at that point guard position that could be rotation players for the Blazers, you know, immediately, or is it just not the case this year?
One guy that I think is intriguing potentially for the Blazers is Avery Bradley, because he's not a point guard, but he would actually work very well in a backcourt with Brandon Roy. Now, the thing is, you already have Jared Bayless on the team. I'm a huge Jared Bayless fan, have always been since he was in the draft, so I don't really know if Avery is a huge upgrade over Brandon, but maybe they're looking at Bayless as the kind of guy that you bring off the bench as a spark plug. You put Bradley in, he's a lockdown defender, he can make shots, he's unselfish, he's a very competitive guy, he's a team player. Maybe that's the kind of guy that you pair alongside of Brandon Roy, because Brandon likes to have the ball in his hands all the time, he wants to play pick and roll, and so having a guy who can play off of him really works. And Avery Bradley could be that type of player. And, you know, there's some question marks whether he'll be there at 22. We have him slated a little bit higher. There are some teams that are really starting to fall in love with this guy. So he's another guy that if Portland targets as really liking, they may have to go up and get him in the late lottery or even a little bit higher than that.
Are you surprised he didn't go back to school, or did you think he was done right from the gate? So he was a top five prospect coming out. Obviously, he had a big name here in the Pacific Northwest. Everyone was following his high school career really intently. Both him and Abdul Ghadi, and then now he everyone kind of thought he would be a top 10 lottery lock basically when he came out, and he decided to go one and done, and now he's like you said in the late teens or early 20s kind of range. Is that a surprise to you, or is that just kind of how it shook out with his role at Texas?
I think that he lost a little bit of confidence in the coaching staff and the direction that they had for him. And I think that he looked at the fact that he wasn't going to be playing point guard next year. So what was the point for him in coming back? I mean, in terms of development, he was going to have the same exact role. And their team was just really a mess. They started off the year, incredibly well. They were ranked number one in the country. They beat Carolina and Michigan State. And then they just completely fell apart. They had some very bad chemistry there. And you could see through the end of the year that it didn't really look like he was having all that much fun. So I think he looked at it as, I'm going to be a first-round pick. I'm confident in myself that I'm going to be able to carve out a good NBA career. And he went for it. And, in a draft like this, which is really shallow on guards, it's tough to fault a kid like that, especially, considering his background. I mean, he it wouldn't hurt his family, obviously, for him to be in the NBA and to be able to help them out financially. So it's tough for me to criticize him, and it doesn't surprise me at all when kids declare or they go back. I mean, you see this every year happen dozens of times, and so I don't know if I'm sounding a little bit cynical at this point, but none of this stuff surprises me at this stage.
No, I hear you. Hey, one other hole the Blazers have is, they've got a lot of front court bodies, obviously already under contract, but they kind of have an issue, I think, with their backups being able to guard the low post fours, the more physical players. They've got a Dante Cunningham, who's better guarding perimeter players. They've got a Jeff Pendergraft, who, kind of fouls a lot around the basket, basically, and maybe he's more natural in a five, the way the Blazers use him. So they could kind of use someone who could defend fours, be active, on the rebounding. Obviously, Nate McMillan's going to want, an active rebounder on both ends, a high character guy, a hustle player. That's the kind of player I could see them targeting maybe with their second round pick or moving up in the second round like they did last year. Which of the fours, and there's a lot of the fours obviously on your draft board in the 20 to 50 range, are there any guys that kind of jump out when I give you those characteristics and say, hey, this could be a fit for that kind of a player and the Blazers might look to use their second round pick on him?
I think one guy that you have to look at is Trevor Booker. He fits that mold because he's one of the toughest players in this draft. He's a little bit undersized, but he's got very long arms, and he's a phenomenal athlete, and he's definitely in that second-round range. He could clearly be there where the Blazers pick, and I know that he definitely has some fans there in that front office. So he's a guy that you could look at as being that. Maybe Gani Lawal is another guy. Samardo Sandoz is moving up the board a little bit, even though I don't know in terms of defensively at the four if he's a great fit. But I would say that those two, and maybe even Dwayne Collins is another guy that they might look at. But Trevor Booker, probably fits that, that description that you gave the best. And Gani Lawal, I'm not sure he's going to be there in the second round.
Yeah, where do you think Booker's going to wind up? I mean, I know you have him actually right now going to the Blazers in the second round, I think at 44. Is there a concern that he might not last that far?
The second round is almost impossible to project. I mean, there are guys that, we project them as late first rounders, and then they just start sliding and sliding and sliding because a lot of teams in the second round, they just don't want to take on extra roster spots. They don't want to take on more guaranteed money. So they're just going to look to sell the picks or to draft the European guy that they can stash overseas for a couple years. So the second round doesn't really go off of talent as much as the first round does, which is why a guy like Booker, he could go anywhere from 31 to 60. I mean, it all depends on fit, really. We're going to have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, when you look at the top 10 picks, who do you see as being the biggest risk for a team to draft? I mean, who's the guy that stands out? You know, they talk about red flags. The Blazers always talk about how they have certain guys who they just don't even consider. They eliminate immediately from the discussion. Who's a guy in the top 10 that you see as being, you know, a big risk, someone that you would steer clear of drafting?
I mean, that's pretty easy. I think you would have to look at DeMarcus Cousins as being that guy. I don't know if I would. It really depends what part of the top 10 you're talking about. If you're talking about the number one pick, the number two pick, I would say, hey, there's probably better guys who are just as talented. Once you get outside of that range, though, he's a tough guy to pass up. I mean, there are certain players who have very poor intangibles that I would never want on my team as a ninth or tenth man because you just say, well, it's just not worth the distraction. But you look at DeMarcus Cousins, this guy is going to be immediately in an elite group of NBA players who can you can throw the ball into the post and he can score with his back to the basket. I mean, I can count three or four guys like that in the NBA right now. You're talking about Al Jefferson. You're talking about Shaq. You're talking about Yao and maybe Pau Gasol. I mean, that's really just about it. So if you have the opportunity to add a guy like that to your team, you have to look at that. But a team like Portland, for example, I don't think they would take that risk, and they don't need to. But there are other teams in the, you know, who haven't been doing as good of a job in the draft and free agency over the last 4 or 5 years that they might have to cut a corner here and there and take a risk and hope that that gets them to the next level.
What did you make of Cousins' physical testing and, you know, his athletic testing and all of his measurements that came out of the combine? It seemed like some people thought, you know, okay, well, he's, you know, he's lost weight, but there's still work to be done. You know, do you think that that's going to affect his status one way or the other?
I mean, it goes along with what we already know about him. You know, it's just the question marks have been there since, you know, the first time I saw him as a junior in high school, and that's that the guy, he doesn't have a great work ethic, that his conditioning is questionable, that he doesn't really get it in terms of what it takes to reach his full potential because he's so talented that he can just get by at half speed. And I think that watching the NBA combine, you look at the athletic things they were doing, it obviously looked like he was going at half speed there. You know, the measurements, he measured out incredibly well in terms of size and length and standing reach. I mean, the guy's a freak. And the body fat percentage, I don't think that surprised anybody. I mean, the fact that that's the best shape he's been in his life is a little bit concerning. So, I mean, I think that it goes back to the question, what we just talked about, is that this guy is the highest risk, highest reward player in the draft, and it's really impossible to gauge at this point how his career is going to pan out. I think a lot of it is going to depend on where he gets picked and the type of people that they surround him with.
No doubt. Okay, last question before I let you go here. What's sort of the state of the union when it comes to international prospects and how they're viewing coming over to America? I think last year there were some questions about when the Blazers drafted Kleyber in the first round. There was some kind of backlash. Maybe he didn't necessarily want to be picked in the first round, and obviously, you know, he's in a pretty good spot over there and having some good success in Europe. How are international prospects viewing the NBA compared to staying, you know, overseas, and has that changed over the last couple of years? Has there been any movement or any trend that you've seen?
I think you can definitely see some movement. I think, first of all, it's tough to paint everybody with the same broad, you know, brush. Some guys grow up huge NBA fans. They wake up at 3:30 in the morning, like Omri Caspi, and they live and die every single day to play in the NBA. And I think you're going to see guys like that continue to come out year after year. Well, now there are others, probably more than in the past, guys who say, you know what, my life over here isn't that bad. I'm getting paid quite a bit of money. I'm a star on my team. I get to speak my own language. I get to eat my mom's food. I'm comfortable with the culture that I'm in. And the NBA, for me, it's just a show. I mean, they look at the style of play in Europe compared with the NBA. It's completely different. And there's a lot of things. Besides, the NBA season is way too long, and it just drags on. In the middle of the season, guys aren't playing hard. And that's a big turnoff for people in Europe to see, which is what I understand why where this NBA is a show thing comes from. I don't necessarily agree with it 100%, but I understand their point of view. In terms of how that's going to – what's going to happen in the future – down the road, I think a lot of it depends on the collective bargaining agreement, whether they're going to change the buyout amount that NBA teams are allowed to contribute to players. For example, you know, with Thiago Splitter, that was what dropped him down to 27. I think that if there were no concerns about his buyout, the guy would have went top 10. I mean, we were pumping the hell out of him for 3 years. We probably wrote, you know, 50,000 words about the guy, and then he goes late first round. So I really think that if they need to raise that amount from 500,000 to a million, or even preferably a million and a half, and that way teams can actually get compensated on the work they put in with young players, and it would be more attractive for them to send their players to the NBA instead of having to cheat and lie and manipulate and change contracts and hide guys and all the little things that go on right now behind the scenes. It's just the European basketball is a wild, wild west. These guys can do whatever the heck they want. The agents get, you know, huge commissions and parts of the buyout, so they're often working against the players, their own, you know, clients, and against the NBA team. So there's a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, but I think that increase in the buyout is going to go a long ways.
Well, very good. Thanks for all the info, Jonathan. Thanks for the time. I know I kept you pretty long, but hopefully we'll take a look at draft day, and we'll keep an eye on Draft Express for all your updates.
Sounds good, Ben. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. I became more curious. Fuck being up north, delirious, more serious. So killer did mixtapes. CEOs heard, now here come Big Cake. But one cat said, Cam, you better recoup. For you back on your block, baby, dead on your stoop. But unhook me up with all this cheddar and loot. The best rap deal of all time, next to Snoop. Money more to clutch, money more to touch. I don't just rhyme, my own liquor stores and such. But yeah, yo, the rap game remind me of the crack game. Niggas wanna get their gun, then start the clap game. For that fame, grow entertainment. Sports, drugs, entertainment. To the arraigning killer.